Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. 200 episodes, folks. I cannot believe we made it. If you're new to this podcast, thank you for finally tuning in. If you've been with us for a portion of the long haul, thank you so much for tuning in and subscribing to us and giving us feedback and telling us when our audio quality stinks and telling us when our interviews are good. I love that feedback. I love the back and forth, and I can't believe we've made it this far. I just got back from the LeConnor Guitar Festival, and if you have never been to a guitar festival like this, there were around 50 luthiers, all acoustic for the most part, exhibiting their wares, and there were everyone from legends like Linda Manzer and Roy McAllister and Steve Klein on hand to younger faces in the world of luthery like Isaac Jang, Megan Wells, who's been on this podcast, Sam Guidry, Tyler Wells. It was an incredible mix of people. There was all sorts of stuff going on all day long. You could try out guitars. You could buy guitars, obviously. You could also go hear clinics and music and workshops. There was a panel discussion that I was a part of on the world of luthery. There was so much going on. It was a great 3 days, and it was awesome to get to meet some of the folks who've been listening to this podcast. You know who you are. You introduced yourselves to me. So thank you so much. It was great, and we look forward to doing it again in 2019. We have a bunch of photos from LeConnor on our website right now, as well as on our Instagram feed. So if you go to Fretboard Journal on Instagram, you'll see a ton of photos. And if you go to fretboardjournal.com, you'll see even more. I want to make our 200th episode kind of special, a little different from the ones where I just Skype or interview someone here at the Fretboard Journal offices in Seattle. So I'm sharing some of my favorite moments from a very special event that we held on March 27th in Austin, Texas. We held a Fretboard Journal live event at the Calton Case Factory, and it was just an incredible time. We heard music. We had readings from the Fretboard Journal. We had an amazing raffle with some incredible prizes. We interviewed some folks on stage, some of the interviews you're about to hear. And we raised a bunch of money for HAM, the local Austin charity that helps out musicians in need of healthcare. We raised around $4,000, I believe. And it was just an incredible time. So I want to share some of my favorite moments from that with you guys on this episode. This was a great event, sort of a Fretboard Summit light. We had around, 200, 300 people there. I loved it. I hope to duplicate it in other cities. And you know what? We also had so much fun in Austin. I hope to bring it back to Austin perhaps next year. So a rundown of what you're going to hear on today's podcast, and you don't need to keep track of all this because I'm going to explain as we go along. And we will also put the timeline in the show notes so you can jump around if you need to. But we're going to be hearing from Steve McCreary of Collings Guitars and Waterloo Guitars. Then a tune from Red Volkert and Paul Glass, two of my favorite Austin-based musicians. Then we got a tune from Kim Warner of the Green Cards, as well as backed by Red Volkert once again. Then my interview with Jimmy Dale Gilmore and Dave Alvin. Yes, those guys came to our party. They have a new record out on June 1st, and you should check that out. And then to close it out, we're going to hear a tune from Anthony DaCosta, former Austin resident, now living in Nashville. And I have to tip my hat to him because without his help, I don't think this event would have been nearly as cool. Anthony raided his Rolodex and helped us out so much with every facet of this party. And so it was great to be able to bring him out to the party and hear his music. He is one of my favorite singer-songwriters right now, and he delivered. So like I said, I will put all the timeline in the show notes so you can bounce around if you need to. In the meantime, our first sponsor was actually a participant at the Fretboard Journal live event in Austin, Austin's own Straight Frets Guitar Service. Danny's motto over there is making people happy one guitar at a time. I believe Straight Frets owns the only Plec machine in the greater Austin area that the public can take their guitar to and have it worked on. But he also does a ton more. He does everything from simple setup works to neck resets, amp repair, electric guitar shielding, you name it. You can check out his website at straightfrets.com. Our second sponsor is, again, our friends at Dying Breed Music. Lane over at Dying Breed specializes in guitars from the golden era from makers such as Gibson and Martin, as well as a few of the more cultish guitar brands of that era. And I have to admit, it's been a couple of weeks since I've gone to the Dying Breed website, dyingbreedguitars.com, and I was floored. There was an entire wall of Shade Top guitars that I hadn't seen the last time I was there. So if you're into Shade Tops or Sunburst guitars, right now is the right time to go over to Dying Breed Guitars or Dying Breed Music. Right now, they've got a 1934 Martin 00018, a 1944 Gibson Southern Jumbo, a 1953 Southern Jumbo, a 37 Gibson L00, and a lot more. You can always call Lane at Dying Breed at 870-818-3434 to hear more about his inventory or maybe talk about consigning one of your guitars through him, or just to chat about vintage guitars because he's very approachable. And if you do reach out to him, tell him the Fretboard Journal sent you. So a brief State of the Union before we get to the fun stuff. Our 42nd issue is off to press. If you have not subscribed to the magazine yet, please do so now at fretboardjournal.com and use the coupon code podcast so that we can start you off with that issue. We think you will love it. I know I loved it. We are also hard at work right now as we speak on our first ever standalone Fretboard Journal electric issue. That's going to be mailing in July. This is going to be an add-on, so it will not come with your subscription. The reason we're doing that is because I think about a third to a half of our readers would be pretty miffed if they got a Fretboard Journal that was all electric. I know you know who you are. And so we're letting people add it on and get it separately a la carte because that was sort of the easiest way to manage that component of the whole thing. And it'll be treated as sort of our own little coffee table book all about electric guitars with all new content. I just interviewed Ry Cooter once again for it, and we talked a lot about his electric gear and a lot more. That is in the works. The pre-order page for that is going to go live, I want to say next week, but if you want to reserve a copy, if you're paranoid and want to reserve a copy, just shoot me an email at jason@fretboardjournal.com and I will make sure you get the link to reserve your copy immediately. We also have a ton of new videos on fretboardjournal.com right now, including a brand new one with Caitlin Canty and Noam Pikilny playing Tennessee Waltz that is absolutely gorgeous. So check that out. There are also a bunch of new episodes of our companion podcast, Luthier on Luthier, hosted by Michael Bashkin. And I have to admit, later this year, I'm hoping we can unveil a couple of new podcast series that you have never heard of and you hopefully will love. If you ever have any ideas for a podcast you'd like to host and you'd like us to kind of help you out with it, reach out to me. You know how to get a hold of me. I know there are only so many hours in the day, and I know there are an increasing number of podcasts about guitars and music, but when I was at Le Conner, a bunch of you said that you listened to every episode of the Fretboard Journal podcast, so I think some of you might have time to listen to a couple more podcasts we churn out. Our final sponsor today is one of the funkiest, coolest guitar shops I've been to lately. It's up in Vancouver, British Columbia, and it is called Exile Vancouver. Yes, it's a guitar shop called Exile, and yes, it's on Main Street. So I'll let you put those two together. I think that's not a coincidence. Exile is a bit of a unicorn of a guitar shop. Not all of their inventory is on Reverb. Not all of their inventory is on their website. In fact, barely any of their inventory is on their website or Reverb. But I can tell you that if you were to go there or you were to call them, they have nearly every Union tube and transistor pedal ever made, along with a ton of boutique pedals. They have all those cool Critter and Guitar-y synths that, even though I'm a fretted instrument guy, I kind of want to buy them. They're a little beyond my price point, but one day I think I'm going to cave and get one, probably for my kid, and just end up hoarding it and never letting him touch it. They have dozens of interesting and neat vintage electric and acoustic guitars from the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, and a ton of accessories. You can call Exile at 604-879-9483 if you want to hear about what they have in stock, or they do have an Instagram page, Exile Vancouver, that you should follow just to get a sense of what they're carrying. I go to Vancouver a lot. There have never been any guitar stores that I've actually loved, so I'm so glad that Exile exists because it is yet another place up there I can go hang out at. Tell them the Fretboard Journal sent you, obviously, if you do reach out to them. Okay, first up on this epic 200th episode of our podcast is my interview at the Fretboard Journal Live with Steve McCreary of Collings Guitars. And obviously, if you are a Collings fan, I would encourage you to go way back into our archives and listen to episode 70 as well, which had our interview with the late, great Bill Collings. But here is Steve McCreary talking about the state of affairs at Collings and Waterloo.
So, I love coming down to Austin to see our friends at Collings Guitars and Waterloo Guitars. And
we love having you come down.
Thank you. And see, for folks who don't know, what is your title there these days?
I've pretty much been the GM for the last 25 years. And after Bill passed last summer, we now have a kind of a three-member executive team.
Okay.
And then directors and managers.
Okay.
As well.
So I want to ask about some of the stuff that's happened since Bill's passed, but how did you get that job? How did you and Bill hook up?
We met through some mutual friends who are musicians here in town back in the... he moved here in 1980 from Houston, and we met through our mutual admiration for a band called Uncle Walt's Band.
Okay.
Which Champ Hood is a local legend, Walter Hyatt and David Ball, and became friends first. And
yeah.
Then after a number of years of that, he had set up a shop way out south and needed someone to help, and it sounded like fun to me.
And
part of it has been.
Yeah. What did you think you were going to be before you hooked up with Bill?
I had done a number of things. I'm not sure any of them were really a very good fit.
Okay.
I worked at law firms and restaurants and all kinds of stuff. And Bill is this amazing engineer guy with incredible sense of design and very creative and stuff, but he wasn't really a people person, and he kind of needed that. And that's what I did. That's what I still do.
Yeah. It seems like that happens a lot. I mean, we hear about that with Taylor Guitars. Bob and Kurt kind of have one's the business side, one's the creative. And
yeah, and it wasn't so much the business side. We've never really been business, strictly business-oriented business. But he'd rather work with machines and tools than deal with people. So I got to do that and work with our dealers and employees, and he worked with tools.
Yeah.
And it worked out. It was great.
And since you are sort of a local, you know, treasure, where does Collings and Waterloo stand today? How many employees? How many guitars a year? How many mandolins a year?
We have about 95 employees, and that includes the Collings, you know, acoustics, electrics, mandolins, cases,
yeah,
and Waterloos, and that includes, you know, all the administrative staff, everything. We bill 30 acoustic guitars a week, 10 Waterloos a week, 15 electric guitars a week, 10 mandolins a week,
yeah,
and as many cases as we possibly can.
And how do you, as the GM, when you know your figurehead is such a force of nature, when he sadly is gone, what happens to the culture of the company? How do you get the troops to work? What happens?
Well, there's no replacement,
yeah,
for a guy like Bill Collings. Anyone here know Bill Collings? And can you imagine anyone being another Bill Collings? No, it's not possible. There's a bunch of people there that have been there for a long time that got to work with him and learn from him, and people that he trusted to kind of hand stuff off to. And I don't think it was ever his goal to just, obviously, to be a single guitar builder. He wanted to have a group of people do this vision he had, and he did that, and we continue to do that.
Yeah.
So we got good guys. We have a great crew. Actually, first, thanks to Calton Cases for doing this and to Fretboard Journal and stuff. I should have said that up front, but no. He did foster this kind of group of people that kind of had the same passion for what he wanted to do, and
yeah,
we're going to keep doing that for as long as we can keep moving our hands.
And anything new that folks should keep their eyes? I heard that the Julian Lodge signature model's doing quite well. And
the Julian is doing extremely well. If you don't know who he is, there's a young man named Julian Lodge, L-A-G-E. And we don't do many signature models. I think we've done one or two in the last 40 years. Julian's a genius, kind of like Bill was, and to watch those two kind of work together, along with, you know, our engineering staff, Clint Watson, and our artist people and our, you know, Bruce and the other guys in the shop. It was really an interesting project to watch. We don't have any future artist things right now in the works.
Sure.
Because we're really cautious about, you know, doing, we don't, some companies do an artist model every other month. You know,
of course.
We're not going to do that. So we have to be very special people to work with us.
Yeah.
So
there aren't many musicians like Julian Lage.
There's not many musicians like Julian Lage.
All right. Well, thanks, Steve.
Sure.
This was fun.
Thank you. Thanks again for doing this, and thanks, everybody, for coming out tonight.
Yeah.
Fretboard Journal, if you don't know what this is, please check them out. Go online and check them out. It's a great magazine that your wife doesn't even mind, or your spouse doesn't mind having at the coffee table.
Sure.
It's got really nicely done, beautiful coffee table type book that's really informative and entertaining for people into things with frets.
Thank you.
All right, I hope you liked that. Up next, also from our Fretboard Journal event in Austin, is a tune from the duo of Red Volkert and Paul Glass.
All right, we've got some music for you guys. Red Volkert has been in the Fretboard Journal 24, maybe? I forget which issue that was. Nathaniel Riverhorse Nakadate, who you're going to hear from in a couple minutes, did that interview. He's somewhere around here. Paul Glass has yet to be in the Fretboard Journal. You sort of have been in the Fretboard Journal, right? Did we feature one of your... Were you in the Michael Stevens?
I think I was quoted.
You were quoted. You had a quote. We'll get you a real article. But what is this? For folks, these are all guitar nerds, so they're going to want to know what you're playing here.
It's called a Telecaster.
And what, it's a Squire?
No, it's before that. This one's a 52 Telecaster that Fender refinished in 1958.
All right. So it's worthless. You can just leave it here
for
us.
It's a refin.
It's a refin. And this fine thing?
This was built by a luthier named Michael Stevens, who was featured in the Fretboard Journal, who used to live in Austin, and... it's one that he and I, over a period of years, collaborated on the design. So he sells these as a Paul Glass model and a 5-string electric mandolin.
All right. Yeah. All right. Red Volkert, Paul Glass. Enjoy, everyone.
We do the same thing if you want. We do the same thing.
Start on that? Yeah. All right. We're going to do our sound check song again.
C from the 5, 1, yep. A 2, a 1, 2.
Well, tonight in a bar, alone I'm sitting, apart from the laughter and cheer, and the scenes from my past rise before me, watching the bubbles in my beer. Visions of someone who loves me brings a long silent tear to my eye, and I know that my life has been a failure, watching the bubbles in my beer. Thank you. I've seen the road that I've traveled, a road filled with heartaches and tears, and I'm seeing my life that I've wasted, watching the bubbles in my beer. Visions of someone who loves me brings a lone silent tear to my eye, and I know that my life has been a failure, watching the bubbles in my beer, watching the bubbles in my beer. All right, thank you. Paul Glass on the mandolin.
Red Volkart on the guitar.
All right. Next up on our extravaganza is a late addition to the Fretboard Journal live event. Kim Warner of the Green Cards happened to be at the Fretboard Journal event. He was not officially listed, and so we had to put him to work, and we had Red Volkart, Telecaster Master, backing him up.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, friends.
Next up on this week's podcast is my interview with Jimmy Dale Gilmore and Dave Alvin. They have a new record coming out on June 1st on Yep Rock Records called Downey to Lubbock. It is a great, bluesy, amazing collaboration between these two masters, and I had a great time chatting with them about the record. So here goes.
So I am based in Seattle, and what was it, a month ago I saw you guys at the Tractor Tavern, our local watering hole where all the good music takes place. And you guys were performing together. I didn't really know what to expect.
Neither do we.
Yeah, I didn't really know the history, but you guys have an album coming out.
Yeah. Yep. First week of June.
June the 1st, I believe.
All right, and how did this project come to be?
Well, Dave and I have been friends for probably 30 years or more.
Yeah.
And but we've hung out together and been, you know, done quite a lot of stuff, but we never did play music together. And last year we just for a lark kind of we did a little tour. We started out here in Texas and ended up doing Southwest New Mexico and Arizona and Colorado. And then I got lost. Something disappeared. You tell the rest of it, Dave.
I'm dead, too.
Oh, are we all dead?
Are we back on? We're back on.
All right. It wouldn't be a Fretboard Journal podcast without some audio problems. Go ahead.
It wouldn't even be a show without audio problems. But anyway, so we just did it just really kind of for the fun of it. But about two or three shows into it, one night Dave said to me, we need to record some of this. And at the time, I said, I agreed immediately, but I thought he meant probably just record a live show, which might have been what he meant at the time, but it didn't take very long before, I guess he talked to the record company about it, and they said, good idea, let's do it. So we did, and we made the record, it's ready to go.
Yeah, I discovered on the tour what a spectacular blues singer Jimmy Dale was, especially he could sing it sweet and he could do it raw and raunchy. So there's a bit of that on the record, of sort of the whole spectrum of our musical personalities.
Really fun for me because I got to really turn loose with probably the kind of stuff I should have always been doing. Except I might not have had a voice anymore if we did that. But Dave is an incredible player, incredible guitar player, and an incredible producer. So I just fell into a really lucky circumstance. I haven't made a record in more than 10 years, and I'm very, very proud of that. Red is here. I see Red. I didn't see him. Good morning, Red.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh. It's trouble in the house, man.
He's up next.
They asked Jimmy Dale and I, they said, do you guys want to play music? And I said, Red Volkart's on the bill, right? And they said, yeah. And I said, no, we'll just go up and talk. If that's cool with you, we don't need any more guitars.
This is a total surprise to me. I had no idea there was anything like this happening over here. I was at the Calton factory about a month ago, and it wasn't here.
Yeah.
So I got lost coming over here because I thought we were going to that place.
Yeah, we've been doing interviews all day, and we've been in little rooms with various radio shows and this, that, and the other, and periodicals and newspapers. And now we have to do the same thing in front of an audience, and it's really weird. Because we didn't prepare any jokes or anything. So our record's called Downey to Lubbock, which is a bit of a joke. Or not a joke, it's a play on something. And that's about all the giggles we got. So meanwhile, back to the interview.
So Jimmy, why did it take, why was there 10 years between recordings for you?
Oh, just because I'm lazy.
You're lazy? You live not far from here, right?
I live out towards Spicewood.
Okay.
Just out past BK on Highway 71.
Okay. And what's a day in the life of Jimmy Dale Gilmore like out there when you're not performing?
I chop down lots of cedars and hang out with my dogs. Not much to it, really.
Writing songs?
Sometimes. I write a line of a song real often. You know, I've got lots and lots of them.
And then you have to string them together?
Yeah, well, now and then I get around to finishing one. That's kind of few and far between.
Yeah.
It's because I'm lazy. Well,
there's no need to get carried away.
Yeah. All right. Overdo a good thing.
Yeah.
And did you guys write some original material for this record?
Yeah, we did. We got a couple that we wrote together, and I wrote one, but it kind of rerun the gamut from songs that, like, there's one song that the late, great Steve Young wrote. He wrote it for Jimmy to sing, but he wrote it for me, if that makes any sense, a song called Silver Lake. There's a couple of songs that I've always loved and Jimmy's always loved, and then it's stuff like, you know, Jimmy and I doing Light in Hopkins, mm-hmm. you know, stuff like that, you know, where we did a version of the Youngblood song, Get Together. And so just anything that kind of struck our fancy.
Were there any surprise commonalities you guys had? I mean, Downey and Lubbock aren't really that closely related in terms of
cities.
Well,
they are. They're both flat.
Flat and dry.
It's true. Flat and dry, you know. That's where... No, we share a commonality in a few different things, but the bottom line is we both come from the same musical background, more or less. We both come out of the folk blues thing. Even though we grew up independently, that's where our commonality, our roots are. And when I was a little kid, I used to hang out at a club, sneak into a club called the Ashgrove. And
sure.
Jimmy was living in California at the time, and he was going to the Ashgrove, so we were passing each other in the dark in this nightclub, 10 years apart, but there we were. And now, you know, a million years later, we're making a record together based off that.
And we weren't really aware of that common background until we started doing these shows together. So at soundcheck, each one of us would, you know, just try a song, and most of the time it would turn out to be, if I did, you know, an old Lightning Hopkins thing, I could sing it. Dave would launch into actually playing it, which blew my mind. But we knew a whole lot of songs together. We had a kind of a built-in repertoire that we didn't know about.
That's amazing.
So really fun.
The Ashgrove shows up a lot in the Fretboard Journal. I know David Lindley's talked about it a ton.
Oh, yeah.
And a bunch of others. What most memorable show each of you saw at the Ashgrove?
There's two for me. There was the very first time I went was the Johnny Otis Orchestra with T-Bone Walker, Big Joe Turner, and Eddie Cleanhead Vincent. And I saw Jimi Hendrix twice, and that show was up there with seeing Jimi Hendrix.
Wow.
So that's like, for me, that's the guide. Everything that I see, I grade it against, okay, there's Jimi Hendrix and Big Joe Turner and T-Bone Walker at the Ashgrove, and you're either, no one's gone above that. People have come close. But the other one, the one that moved me stylistically was, I saw an amazing double bill in 1971 of Reverend Gary Davis a few months before he passed away. You know, and he was doing spiritual blues. He's 80 some years old. He knows that his trail is coming to an end. And the co-bill was Johnny Guitar Watson. And on his way to the gig that evening, Johnny Guitar Watson got arrested. And he had to get bailed out in order to make the gig. So you had this one man playing acoustic blues, who was spiritual and thinking about the grand meaning of life, and then you had a young, electric, loud, pissed off Johnny Guitar Watson playing the meanest blues you'd ever heard, and I was sitting there going, oh, it's the same thing. And that was my biggest night at the Ashgrove.
Jimmy, what was yours?
Well, there's a story that I've well, we've had several interviews today, so I've told the story over and over, but it's a true story. And I like it. I want to hear it again myself.
Okay.
That's what Tommy Hancock used to say about the stories he told over and over. One night at the Ash Grove, I never saw Lightning play in Texas, but I heard him a lot at the Ash Grove, and I got to be friends with him. I hung out with him after the shows. But one of the first times I saw him, when he came on that night, Ed Pearl, who was the owner and the impresario of the place, he came on I didn't even know what he looked like or anything. There was just this voice came out of the sky, and he said, "And now the man whom even the Beatles have called the most soulful cat alive, Lightning Hopkins." So, first of all, I laughed because you don't say lightning. It's not Lightning Hopkins. It's Lightning. But that was a minor thing. But sitting right behind me, there was this old black man. And I could, he was kind of close to me, so I could hear him talking. And he said to somebody who's with him, he said, "Yeah, well, what's Lightning say about the Beatles?" So, which was a revelation to me, because I suddenly realized he was right, that Lightning's opinion counts for a lot more than the Beatles' opinion. I didn't know that till I heard him say that.
Yeah.
So that was a memorable experience. But I had a lot of great nights at the Ash Grove, a lot of wonderful friends. I met Taj Mahal back then before he made any recordings. And it was just John Harrell. There's a ton of the Greenbrier boys and John, the folk people from back then.
Clarence White used to play the Ash Grove.
And all the...
it was a great place.
I got to be friends with Brownie McGee up in Berkeley, around in that same time. So I got to hang out with those guys and be with them and be, I'll always treasure that time.
Nice. So you guys are surrounded by 250 guitar nerds, and I need to ask the requisite guitar-related questions about what's on the new record, but before I get to that, what's the guitar that got away for each of you? What's the guitar that you sold or was stolen that you still pine over?
I ran into a 1961 Fender Stratocaster in Rome, Italy. And I sat down and played it. Little tiny guitar store in Trastevere. And I was playing at Rosewood Neck, and I was dying. And I said, "How much do you want for this?" And he goes, $3,000. And I said, "Okay." Now, this is before cell phones and all that kind of jazz. I said, "I'll be back in an hour." And I just bought a house. I ran to my hotel room, did the whole long-distance rigmarole, finally got a hold of my accountant. I said, and she was a former singer, so she understood. And I said, "It's a 61 Strat. It's in beautiful condition. $3,000. Can I afford it?" She goes, "No, but go get it." I said, "Great." Hang up the phone, ran down to the store, walk in, and the guy says, "Oh, man, I just sold it."
Oh.
That was the one that got... Of course, he did it in a very cute Italian accent, but...
I kind of a funny, kind of sad story. I, in 1971, I got a real nice Martin, a D28, And I played it for quite a while. It was in the time when we were in, the Flatlanders were all living together in a house in Lubbock. And a couple of years later, I was going to learn how to play electric guitar from Jesse Taylor. And Jesse was going to teach me to play acoustic. He was going to teach me to play electric. I was going to teach him to play acoustic. So we traded guitars. And then about a year later, and I never got the hang of it. I couldn't play the electric. It was a kind of a failure. And Jesse got to be really great on the acoustic. But somehow we got separated there then for about a year or so. And the next time I saw him, it turned out he had hocked that Martin and lost it. So, but I still have the one that I got from him.
Wow.
Wow.
It's a true story.
I bet there are a lot of unbelievable true stories from the Flatlander's house that you guys all shared. Are there?
Yeah. Untellable ones, too.
Did the saw player live in the house, too?
No, he lived down the street. And he was there most of the time. Most of us were there most of the time. The whole gang of friends lived there, sort of. And
yeah.
There were five of us that that officially lived there, but
yeah,
probably 30 people sort of lived there.
So you guys recorded this record. What did you use on it? What guitars did you decide to lug to the studio?
I used my 1934 National Duolian. I used a Martin DC-Ara. I used a Martin Triple Ott 18. And I used a 64 Stratocaster.
Nice. And Jimmy?
I used a black Gibson Dove that I've had for a couple of years. I decided to stop traveling with my Collings. I decided to take care of it and
yeah,
keep it at home, not lose it at the airport. But I ended up with this Gibson that I just really, really love. And then I also played, this guy made me start playing the harmonica again. So I used a couple of Lee Oscar harmonicas that I had, and then we played a song in C where I needed an F harp, so I didn't have one. So Danny Bland went and found them. The only thing he could find was a marine band.
Yeah.
It worked just as well as ever.
Now, do you have a primary, is the Collings your primary guitar for songwriting when you're back at the ranch?
Well, probably so. I'd say we have two of them. My wife has a little one, and okay, I use it a whole lot. It's just got a real sweet, pretty little sound, but I trade around with all of them. But probably the Collings are probably the two that I pick up the most.
Yeah, and Dave.
When I'm around Jimmy's ranch.
No, when you're home.
Whatever guitar is closest to my hand, it doesn't matter.
All right. Well, when does the record?
Or do you want a real technical answer? My 58 D18.
Well, yeah, that's our.
That's okay. That's the one
less,
I do it on.
That's whatever you're comfortable with. I know they're maybe just tools for you. So, yeah. So remind us all when the record comes out.
The record, Downey to Lubbock, comes out the first week in June. We'll be here in Austin on June 2nd at Antone's.
All right.
Come on down and drink too much.
All right. Dave Alvin, Jimmy Dale Gilmore, thank you guys so much for coming out. Braving
Thanks
the rain.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thanks, Carlton Cases, too.
Yeah.
All right, last but not least, Anthony DaCosta was a tremendous resource when it came to throwing our event in Austin, and he helped us out so much. He's an incredible guitarist. You probably have seen him on stage with Sarah DeRose, but he is equally talented as a singer-songwriter, and he is one of my favorite songwriters working today. Check out his music. He did a collaboration album with Adam Levy as well that you should check out. But here's a tune from Anthony DaCosta.
Let's go out tonight like it is last year, like everything's alright and it's late last year. We'll walk around this planet till we're home. We'll both get old. Let's go out to the ball and see them all dressed up. I'll tell you that you're pretty. We'll get all messed up. We'll talk about the future. We'll call ourselves the future and we'll mean it. It's been a restless several years, full of ignorance and fears. I think it's time for you to go. I think it's over and you know. You had a nice impressive run. You had your way, you had your fun. I wasted hours with your tongue. It's like I never learned to love. No one ever walked me through it. No one taught me how to do it. No one told me that it's real. And it's not enough to feel. And it's not enough to promise. And it's not enough to try. I know I'm not the only one. I just can't be the only one. I know I'm not the only one who knows. I've been looking up our future on the World Wide Web. Been looking up our history on the World Wide Web. I read the transcripts of the Lincoln and Douglas debates. It's like all of a sudden there were Germans. Acres and acres of Germans. Hilarious Germans. Their English was pretty good. They came into this country, they fed it with disease. They killed too many trees, baby, everyone agrees. You can't win when you're old, you can't win when you're angry. You can't do everything you're told. It's not a sign from above, it's not from anyone you love. It's not a bird, it's not a car, it's not afraid of what you are. It's not a plate, it's not a plane, it's not a god, it's not a name. Don't waste your money or your time. I know I'm not the only one. I just can't be the only one. I know I'm not the only one. No. There's no one left that you could turn to now. And you know there's someone new. You better learn from now. Your mother's too afraid. Your father's not alive anymore. I want it to be perfect. I want it to be right. I want to fall in love. It's gotta be tonight. I don't care if it's you. I don't care if it's her. I don't care if it's the both of you. It must be nice to be a Mormon. I know they get a lot of shit, but I thought a lot about it. And I think we should admit that it'd be nice to have five wives. It'd be nice to have five husbands. It'd be nice to live in Utah. But you don't want to fight, cause you don't want to lose. Well, I don't have a choice, so I don't want to choose. And I came to let you know, I came to let you go. I came to tell you so. So let's go out tonight like it is last year. Like everything's alright and it's late last year. We'll walk around this planet and I'll kiss you on the Ferris wheel. I'll hold you out over the ocean. In the middle of April, I was willing and able. I was under the table and over my head. I can never remember. It was early December or later November when it started again. I know I'm not the only one. I just can't be the only one. I know I'm not the only one who knows. Thanks again. Thanks to everybody who played. Thanks to the Fretboard Journal. Have a great rest of your week.
All right, folks, that was our 200th episode. I hope it was fun for you. I know it was fun for me. Next week, we will return to our regularly scheduled Fretboard Journal podcast that weigh in at only a half hour or 45 minutes and have one subject. But today, I decided to just go all out. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please, please, please leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever podcast app you use. And please share the Fretboard Journal podcast with your friends.